AUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The U.S. Department of Justice is suing Texas to remove the buoys the state has deployed to repel migrants crossing the Rio Grande. Reporter Chris Fox in Austin.
The DOJ lawsuit calls for Texas to immediately remove the water-based barriers and to stop the deployment of any additional buoys. A defiant Texas Governor Greg Abbott sending a letter to President Biden saying Texas will see you in court. In the meantime, the state will fully utilize its sovereign authority to respond to the border crisis you created. The White House responded. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
The governor's action is making it difficult to access the river, patrol the area, and arrest individuals who attempt to enter the country unlawfully. And so those are unlawful.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
Some 230 million people are expected to feel temperatures of 90 degrees or higher by Wednesday. CBS's Christian Benavides in Miami.
People here are used to hot summers, but with the feels-like temperature at about 113 degrees, they say this is a whole nother level.
I used to be able to be in the sun, take the heat, but like it just feels like I'm getting burned every time that I'm out.
Homeless advocates in the area concerned about heat stroke distributed water to people living on the streets.
I don't remember a time where more lives were at risk than right now.
Researchers say July is on pace to become the hottest month on record.
The U.S. Forest Service says its own prescribed burn started an April 2022 wildfire that nearly burned across more than 60 square miles into Los Alamos, New Mexico. President Biden has renewed his concern over a vote by Israel's parliament that takes away some of the powers of the judiciary. CBS's Linda Kenyon.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says President Biden has expressed his concerns about the changes, but she says those changes will not alter the U.S.-Israel relationship.
The core of that relationship stems out of democratic interests and democratic values. That still remains the same.
She adds, any changes in a democracy must have broad consensus, and in this instance, that does not seem to be the case. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, The White House.
An employee of the Obama family drowns at their summer home. It happened yesterday and the body was recovered today. CBS's Matt Piper.
Tafari Campbell had been a personal chef of the Obamas after the family first met him as a sous chef at the White House. When former President Obama left office, they asked Campbell to go with them and he did. The 45-year-old was near the Obamas' home on Martha's Vineyard paddleboarding when he drowned. The search for the married father of twin boys started after reports from a fellow paddleboarder that he had struggled on the surface went under and never resurfaced. The Obamas, who were not present at the home, called Campbell a beloved part of our family.
This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. 2 years in prison and some probation time is the federal sentence for a West Ellis man that made racist threats. 45-year-old William McDonald made the threats towards black residents exercising their right to fair housing. McDonald vandalized vehicles and property and left threatening notes filled with racial slurs, demanding that the victims move out of the neighborhood. The U.S. Attorney's Office and the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division worked together on the case. A local developer is rapidly expanding its co-working office developments in Waukesha County. Pete Schwaba has more.
Three separate locations are set to open soon for unique office arrangements. The former Boston Store Furniture Gallery building in Brookfield will be converted into co-working offices with around 300 workstations, meeting rooms, and event space.
For news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
So much waiting for me. Yeah, I wanna go outside. I wanna be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Who's telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Did you know it's been 14 years this month since the last time we raised the minimum wage? And what's interesting to me is over the weekend, I had a conversation with somebody. It's kind of that which side are you on, you know, red hat, blue hat thing that I often get myself in the middle of. And I say, look, I'm on the side of working people. And right now, the only people who seem to be looking out for working people in this moment are the people wearing the blue hats. I wish there was a time. Where the red hats, you know, gave a rat's behind about working people, but it's just not there. So as I was looking up, you know, the history of the minimum wage increase, because it has been so long, 14 years, that's a couple of presidencies ago. That's an entire Obama 8 years. That's the 4 years of Donald Trump, and thus far, well, 2 years of the Biden administration. And you're looking at, you know, all the way back to Bush. And I was thinking about it. My daughter wasn't even born yet when this was going on. And it's one of those things where you go, for some, that's a lifetime ago, the last time we raised the minimum wage. And I went back and I looked at, you know, how it happened, you know, because I was remembering it. And I remember that we had George Miller, the Democrat from California, on the show when they proposed this. Back in 2007, you had, you know, this is a long time ago. 2007, they introduced it right at the beginning. It was part of the first 100-hour plan for the new Democratic majority in the House, and they banged it right through. All 233 Democrats voted to increase the minimum wage, as you would have expected. But interestingly enough, in the House, you had 82 Republicans who came along to increasing the minimum wage, just to increase the minimum wage. Now, you had 116 Republicans who, no, we will not do such a thing. And at the time, you know, you go, wow, that's a lot. I mean, can you imagine today? Now, Bush, you know, who was president then, said, no, we can't pass a minimum wage increase without gaining a pound of flesh for the business community, and said we need tax cuts because that's the right-wing conservative Republican fix for everything. It's the one thing they're always in favor of, tax cuts. And they claimed it was for small businesses because they wanted to offset the increase in the minimum wage. So we, the taxpayers, are going to pay the cost of, and this is the thinking on this is remarkable. The taxpayers are going to pay the cost of increasing the wage for low-wage workers. which is just mind-blowingly amazing. Now, the Senate, they would have no part of a clean minimum wage increase. The Republicans would not allow a cloture vote. 43 Republican senators voted against allowing a cloture vote. So had to go back and add that tax break for the corporate folks in there. And miraculously, it passed the Senate 94-3. You just had three Republicans who voted against it and one who didn't vote, and two Democrats who didn't vote. And that happened on February 1st of 07. So, you know, again, this is great. You know, we're moving along on the minimum wage. The House passed it. The Senate passed it again, middle of May of 07. Had to do it as part of the Iraq War Supplemental Aid Bill. But $257 million went to businesses over a 10-year period, you know, to offset the increase, you know, to kind of make it a little easier to swallow the fact that they were going to have to pay their workers something. Now, tipped workers got bupkis. Nothing. Federal minimum wage, even to this day, $2.13 an hour. Let that roll off your tongue a few times. $2.13 an hour, and you go, but, you know, they get tips, of course. And for me, it became, you know, as I was thinking about this, this is kind of the, you know, the which side are you on kind of a scenario. If everything that Republicans have to do is good, well, we gotta pay the master, you gotta pay the business owners to do right by their employees. It's incredible to me. And I'm looking at what's going on with UPS. And the Teamsters are doing informational pickets all across the country. They're practicing, they're showing people, hey, look at us, and doing an incredible job. But this is a company that is wildly profitable. I mean, wildly profitable. They 2022 had over $100 billion in total revenue. Let that roll off your tongue a few times. $100 billion in total revenue. 13.9 of that pure profit in their pockets out the door. And then you add on top of that the fact that $8.6 billion in stock buybacks and, you know, almost $46 million in compensation for the executives. You know, they need a little extra cheese on their Whopper. And for me, the key number in this is that $8.6 billion in stock buybacks. Because again, remember, these are the people who told us, you know, give us tax breaks, help us offset our costs, and we'll invest it in new equipment and better wages for workers. We're going to do the good stuff. We're benevolent. We're the benevolent employers. And that $8.6 billion says to me that they have nothing more productive to do with that money than to enrich the shareholders and the executives. Because that $8.6 billion should have been plowed back into the business, into compensating workers who made the $100 billion in revenue. Just seems simple to me. But again, it's another one of these, which side are you on? Are you on the argument side of, you know, well, those UPS workers, they make a lot of money. Yeah, because they produce an incredible profit. They should share in that. So either you believe that it's a meritocracy that we live in, because this is what conservatives tell me they believe in. Either you believe in that idea and that, hey, these workers are producing an enormous amount of profit. These workers are producing an enormous amount of growth. So much so that you just said, hey, $8.6 billion of that, yeah, we can just, you know, send it away. Either you believe that or you believe that, you know what, we're all just cogs in a machine. And workers are disposable, and you'll take what you get, and you won't throw a fit, as my wife used to tell the kids. And right now, you've got workers who are saying, no, we're... And it's just not at UPS. It's at a number of places across this country where workers are fed up. And we're in a moment. Again, which side are you on in this moment? Are you on the side of people saying, look, we should have dignity and respect in work? Or, you know what, we're just here at the will of the employer, at the whim of their benevolence. And this is where, you know, this is where you test your soul. Because red hat, blue hat has consequences. Red hat, blue hat gets you blue hat decent wages. Red hat, well, you're on your own, buddy. Free market. How many times did Ron Paul say there should be no minimum wage? If you're desperate enough to work for a buck an hour, you know what? That's the free market. If that's all you're worth, that's what you get. So again, which side are you on? For instance, there's another moment where healthcare is front and center. Personally, I would do healthcare a whole lot differently than Red Hat and Blue Hat right now. But understand, the Affordable Care Act did some incredible stuff, set some standards, opened up opportunities for people to get insured for the first time in their lives, saved people's lives. And what did we get out of Republicans? What was the response? We're going to repeal and replace it. And you'd go, okay, what are you going to replace it with? Well, clearly, pay or die. Because that's all they have. There's no policy chops in this debate. It's pay or die. And right now, they're off the repeal and replace bit, and now they're going after, hey, let's just destroy the ACA by coming out with and strengthening these ridiculous short-term policies that the Trump administration really put up front and center. Understand, with the ACA, we set a floor. So you know what? Health insurance has to at least cover this minimum. And, you know, preventative care, a set amount of visits, no caps, all kinds of things that they put in place that said, you know what, we're not going to allow you to cheat consumers because they didn't read the fine print. Well, what Republicans want is they want to, well, undo all of that, which is why we're in this moment. You know, again, which side are you on? The Biden administration is talking about ending these junk insurance policies. And we know what they are. They're those ones where, you know, hey, you can get this great health insurance card for, you know, $8 a month, and it'll be fabulous because it'll cover absolutely nothing. And Republicans have passed a piece of legislation that would make this even longer. It's called the Choice Arrangement Act. Custom Health Option and Individual Care Expense Act. The Choice Arrangement Act. And what it is it says, look, you know what? The policy that you get may not cover anything. It will undo all of the things that the ACA has done, like bring back pre-existing conditions. Sorry, we're not going to cover that pre-existing conditions. Sorry, we're only going to pay X amount over the lifetime of this policy. And if you exceed that, well, that's it. That's all we're paying. You know, you don't get maternity care. You don't get prescription drugs. You don't get a whole bunch of stuff. Now, what the right will tell you is, well, the consumer, they know. You know, they know that it's a crappy plan. They know they're rolling the dice buying something of minimal coverage. And the reality is most people don't know, which is why 80% of bankruptcies in this country are because of medical debt. Because people are still getting screwed over by a health insurance system that, well, profits the very wealthy. And, you know, as I said, during the Obama years, they set rules limiting what these insurers can get away with. Also, they set limits on these junk policies. And they said for 3 months, like if you're changing jobs, okay, you need some gap stuff that'll help you get to your next job. Okay, we understand that the system is set up to help you get to the next spot. Okay. Personally, I would open up the ACA and make it immediately that day. You lose your job, bang, you get that. But I get it. You short term. What did the Trump administration do? Well, they allowed plans to be 365. And I think up to 3 years. So it's no longer about stopgap anymore. It's about, well, this is your policy. And what's interesting is, you know, these junk policies, according to the Congressional Budget Office, they're saying about 1.5 million people have them. And I have to wonder how many people actually know that what they got is junk and that they're rolling the dice. How many people actually get that, you know, maybe you're not covered for cancer. Maybe you didn't check the right box. Maybe you didn't check the right box and then said, well, sorry, heart attacks are, you know, those aren't covered. You'll have to get a coupon for that. And I ask the simple question, should this be how a system is run, where we spend more money on healthcare and on health insurance than any country in the world, and we get worse outcomes. Again, which side are we on in these moments? And for me, this is just another one of those examples where you have to, which camp are you in this moment? Because there doesn't seem to be any sanity in the center of, hey, how do we make sure that everyone gets to move forward? So for me, picking up the blue hat, but I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Let me know what you think. Have you ever had one of these junk policies? Because I did years and years ago, right when I was first starting out. I was working for a security guard company, and I was getting the health insurance for $60 a month. I still remember it. And I went to go to the doctor and like, oh, sorry, we don't cover any of that. What a rude awakening that was. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, this again, you know, in this world of red hat, blue hat, and as was pointed out to me, the Republicans only care about workers when they're in utero. Again, not a shocking point at all. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing?
I'm insane. We're in good shape.
All right. That's good. Good start.
Okay. So what I wanted to say is you were talking about the junk insurance in the hospital stays and rolling the dice, et cetera. And really, people need to set up and pay attention to what is going on because, you know, I'm still receiving bills from my husband's three hospital stays, you know, January into February, and then March, and then April, you know, on down. And the second hospital visit, which was only 3 days, it cost $483,000.
Wow.
For 3 days. So if they think that it's not going to happen to them, they need to wake up because it will happen. The hospital bills are outrageous, and they're going to end up having to file for bankruptcy.
No, I mean, like my daughter, when she broke her arm, it was like $18,000. I mean, it's a broken arm. It was crazy.
It is crazy. And in a hospital visit number two, my husband was in there for like 3.5 days, and that was when, you know, he was jaundiced from, they had given him all that medication and stuff, which kicks the pancreatitis in, and he was in there for 3 days, and he had to get a procedure done, and that was it. I mean, $483,000 and some odd dollars. I mean, that's insane. But, you know, the Republicans, they don't care, and the evangelicals don't care. And
well, we'll crowdsource
it. It's just a... Yeah,
we'll crowdsource
it's crazy.
No, I mean, it's insane where we are, Alice. I appreciate the call, though. Thanks. I got to move along. Let's go. Let's CJ in Madison, Wisconsin on line two. How you doing, CJ?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call again, Rick.
What's on your mind, brother?
If you recall, thank you very much. If you recall, during Obamacare, the Republicans offered amendments to the policy, which it was deemed it's no longer Obamacare because it's considered a tax and not a forced mandate. But that the Republicans offered amendments to cheapen insurance by allowing it to be sold across state lines. And one thing we know, competition makes anything better. Competition, capitalism makes things better.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I disagree with that blanket statement.
The nail by the Democrats.
Yeah, I disagree with the blanket statement you made. CJ, relax. I do remember that fight. And I do remember that, you know, the Affordable Care Act turned into a lot of very conservative ideas. And thanks to Joe Lieberman for that. So we didn't get what I wanted and not what a lot of people wanted on the left. This was a bill that nobody was overly happy with. But I'll tell you this, CJ, it has saved people's lives.
Right. Or on the right.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're going to make the argument that the competition. So this idea of competition. So you're going to be willing to. I'm not going to cover myself for this, or I'm going to allow this to be in there to cheapen the cost. It's like, you know, it's like the conversation I had with my son about motorcycle insurance. This idea that, you know, you get what you pay for. If you buy crap insurance, CJ, you're going to get garbage, and we see that in these short-term plans. This we know. So there's got to be a way forward that both of us can agree that people don't go bankrupt because of health insurance.
I agree. And one of those things was to pick and choose what you need. I don't need a paternity care. I don't plan on having a baby. So for me to pay for people, you know, to have that in a group, you should be able to buy in groups. You should be able to focus. You should be able to buy across state lines. And competition is what makes it more affordable. And it's not. And we're actually living what your party passed right now. So the cost has not gone down. You haven't been able to choose your doctors all the time. And it's gone up. So I wouldn't exactly call Obamacare a success.
It's saved people's lives, CJ.
It really doesn't exist as Obamacare.
I have spoken with people who are eternally grateful that they're walking this earth because someone got something passed. Is it perfect? No, not even close. And I'll be the first to say that it is not perfect, that we should have been doing what we did with Medicare from the beginning, and that is tweaking it to make it better. All we got from Republicans was repeal and with replace. And what was their plan to replace it with? Basically pay or die. It's basically what you're saying. You should be able to get the crappiest insurance we can get. If you're willing to take these risks and these risks, that's your right, CJ.
You want to know what they offered?
I know what they offered. They offered health savings accounts.
That was demonized? Oh, no, yes, and only 10%. If you would start as a young person who doesn't want to buy big-time insurance because they're healthy, they would be allowed to put 10% of their Social Security into an account.
Of their Social Security. So we're now going to go after and gut Social Security.
What they're getting now.
You know, it's amazing to me, CJ, and I got to move along here in a second, but it's amazing that it's always going after Social Security. It's always, hey, let's see how we can, the death of 1,000 paper cuts.
It's going broke, Rick.
It's amazing to me how that works, but I appreciate the call, CJ. Thanks. I appreciate it. No, and this is, again, one of these things that the right does masterfully. You know, we're going to put competition in there. We're going to have that blind faith belief that's going to fix all problems. And what competition will get you is the lowest plan, the lowest things, the fine print that most people don't read. And that's the problem with these junk plans, because people think, hey, I'm getting insurance. It's like, well, my kid with the motorcycle insurance. His friend goes, I've got full coverage. I pay $100 a year. And I said to him, no, we went and got insurance that actually covers him. If he hits something, his bike is covered. the person that he hits is covered. If there's any damage, it's covered. And these are the limits. And we walk through this, whereas the state minimum coverage is basically nothing. And this is the same thing with this, with the health insurance. They want to make it the same thing. Where at the end of the day, though, who ends up getting stuck with the bill? We, the taxpayers. Because thanks to people not having insurance, we all cover that. Because as a society, and I don't care what CJ says, and maybe he's willing to let people die on the street, but decent Americans are never going to allow people to die on the street corners and not allow them to get the care that they need. And are we doing a great job of it? No, we should be doing better. And this is where I call to both sides, red hat and blue hat, do better. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day Louisville sewer workers walked off the job. The Daily American reported that hundreds of black sewermen stopped work and began marching through the streets armed with picks and shovels. They went from one sewer construction site to the next, calling workers out to strike for higher wages. The Great Railroad Strike of 1877 had clearly impacted workers in mid-southern cities like Memphis, Nashville, and Louisville. Historian Stephen J. Hoffman observes, these workers were able to capitalize on strike threats to advance their demands. Railroad bosses for the Louisville, Nashville, and Great Southern had rescinded pay cuts for mechanics and engineers. But they had not raised wages for the lowest paid laborers. Those laborers joined sewer workers in their march through the city. By nightfall, the mass of the integrated strikers marched to the L&N depot, clashing with police. Some broke off to march to the Short Line depot, smashing windows of the mayor's house on the way. Though the crowd was largely dispersed by early morning, Louisville was now in the midst of a general strike. Hoffman describes the scene. Workers at the metal shops and foundries downtown struck for higher wages. There were reports of strikes at the Kentucky Lead and Oil Works. All the downtown furniture factories, woolen mills, horse collar makers, and tobacco factories, as well as by many of the city's coopers, brickmakers, and African-American levee workers. Many of the demands of these workers, which tended to focus on wages and hours, were met and they returned to work quickly. Though southern cities avoided railroad strikes for the most part, they could not evade the great strike's impact on other sectors of the workforce. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Rube Goldberg would marvel at Senator Joe Manchin's wacky, convoluted machinations to rig the system so fossil fuel polluters can run roughshod over nature, local people, and democracy. Goldberg was a master of satirical cartoons, drawing hilarious schematics of convoluted contraptions to do silly tasks. His self-operating napkin, for example, involved a cracker, toucan, skyrocket, sickle, and a pendulum attached to a napkin, all operating sequentially to wipe the chin of a soup eater. So here comes Joe with his own sequential machinations to zip, ping, spring, push his pet corporate boondoggle into law. Manchin's Mountain Valley Pipeline would ram a 300-mile polluting pipe through the pristine mountains of West Virginia into Virginia and North Carolina, ripping through farms, communities, national parks, and 1,000 streams and waterlands. The people hated it, and amazingly, environmental regulators and multiple courts sided with the people again and again. Time for Joe's Rube Goldberg Act. Late last year, ping! Manchin switched from a no on a climate change bill to a yes in exchange for President Biden supporting the pipeline. But congressional progressives rebelled, so their dirty deal failed. Then, spring, Biden snuck Manchin's boondoggle into this year's must-pass debt ceiling bill, so whoosh, locals and environmentalists were blown away. Wait, though, the federal court that had been siding with the people still had a say. But zzzt. Manchin and Biden teamed up with congressional Republicans to shift jurisdiction over the pipeline from that court to one with corporate-friendly judges. But the abandoned court says, hold it, Congress is unconstitutionally interfering in the judicial branch's power. This is Jim Hightower saying, so do Manchin and Biden get to stiff the people? Undecided, but they've already revealed to the people how corrupt their Rube Goldberg system is. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, another one of these which side are you on moments. And look, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and we've talked about them numerous times over the years. They're holding, I guess the next couple of days it's coming up, their annual meeting. This time it's going to be in Orlando. And oh boy, I can't wait to find out what kind of anti-worker, anti-consumer, anti-citizen garbage is going to ooze out of this orgy of greed and fascistic fanaticism. But here we are. It's coming. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what we might expect from the ALEC folks, the good corporate folks. I've asked Don Wiener to come talk with us. He's a writer and researcher with the good folks over at the Center for Media and Democracy. Their website, exposedbycmd.org. Don, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi there.
I gotta tell you, every time ALEC gets together, nothing good comes of it. And you've got a piece out right now on what you think is coming out of this ALEC meeting. Walk me through, one, who is ALEC and what do they normally do? And then walk me into what you think's coming.
Sure. ALEC is a gathering of Republican state legislators. They come from all the states. They meet together, and meeting with them are corporate lobbyists and other corporate representatives. And together, behind closed doors, they put together their wish list of legislation they'd like to see at the state level. And then the state legislators go back to their states, having been prompted by the corporate lobbyists on how to talk about what they're introducing. They introduce the legislation, and then we have fights all over the country at the same time on the same pieces of legislation, because they usually copy it verbatim from what they decide.
Yeah. And in a number of places, Don, the legislators don't even take their names off of it.
Right.
They leave the American Legislative Exchange Council's name on, don't even put their own name on their homework. It's always funny when someone forgets to do that, but they do.
To do a job, they've also got staff people in many cases, right, who should be doing this, but they don't. It gets spoon-fed to them. And, they introduce every year a dozen or so new bills. A lot of those bills are anti-worker or anti-environment or anti-consumer. They all are kind of bills your listeners are probably familiar with, degrading the environment, attacking unions and working people. I just wrote an article that appeared today on our website about one very disturbing proposal that ALEC is recommending to its members that they vote and bring back to their states. And that's a proposal that would prevent employers from voluntarily recognizing labor unions under neutrality agreements. So here we have a Republican Party that believes in the free market and that employers should not be interfered with, putting forth a proposal that says you cannot recognize a union even if you want to.
Now, this is the same, just so I get this clear, Don, this is the same Republican Party who tells me that they want smaller, less intrusive government, get government out of my life. And it sounds like what you're telling me is they want to put government right between you and your relationship with your employer.
Right. Well, it's the power of the state, Rick. I mean, they want to use the government to put a more of a wedge between employers and employees. And what the proposed bill says is that as an employer, you cannot receive any subsidies from a state. So those would be tax breaks or grants or money for workforce development. You cannot receive any subsidies from a state if you voluntarily agree to allow the union into the shop to try to organize the members. So you're not even preventing them from having a union. You're preventing them from trying to have a union.
So let me ask you this. Now they're dead set against unions. And I look at the state of Tennessee, where the Tennessee Employee Free Choice and Privacy Act, I guess this is what this is based on, according to your article. So the companies can't freely say, you know, we're going to be neutral. We're not going to harass and intimidate. We're not going to hold captive audience meetings. We're not going to threaten to fire workers. We're not going to fire people. We're not going to threaten to close. We're not going to do any of this stuff that we've been getting away with. We're just going to let people decide, and where the chips fall, we may. Then no money. What happens if the unions go in and organize anyway? Do they then still hold the company, you know, liable and then take the money, which would even make the employer even more anti-union? Is that part of this too?
I think that's right. I mean, or the facility wouldn't get built. they will use their tax subsidies as a cudgel to try to pressure the employer into not having reasonable relationship with their union. So the example, what happened in Tennessee, and I suspect, Ricky, you've told your listeners about what went on in Tennessee last month and the month before. The Republicans there are not the smartest group of legislators, and they provided $900 million to Ford to build a new lithium battery plant in the state. And they didn't realize that if you invite Ford in, the UAW comes with it.
Right.
And they woke up and they realized it when it was pointed out to them that the UAW has an arrangement with Ford where Ford will not prevent them from talking to workers and trying to sign them up, you know, get union cards, you get a majority of cards. You have a recognized union.
Yeah, but here's the crazy part, Don. Here's the screwy part of this. If I'm a legislator in Tennessee, I want those 5,600 jobs in my state. I want those jobs to be as good a paying job as I can possibly get. So one, I can say, hey, look what I brought. But two, and more importantly, they're making more money, which means that's going to reverberate through the local economy. It means more tax base. It means more other jobs. It means, you know, it means finally you're pushing a low road economy upward. I don't see the downside in here. What's the problem here? This just sounds like it's just hatred of unions and just bad economics.
Well, you know, we're not for all tax incentives. Remember Charles Koch, who I follow pretty closely. His company, the oil conglomerate, Koch Industries, has received almost $500 million in tax incentives when the company doesn't need it. Ford is saying, we'll strike a bargain with you. We'll go to the banks. We'll use our own money, our shareholder money, and we'll build a new plant, but you've got to chip in something. So there's some incentives that make sense, Rick, like you say. And here, Ford would not build the plant were the state not chipping in some money. But now this subsidy for Ford is grandpersoned in. So the bill took effect a few months ago, but the Ford plant incentive has already been provided. So this is them realizing after the fact that they made a mistake and they don't want to do this ever again, which is encourage a union to come into the state.
No, it sounds like,
you know, it's a right to work state. They have a terrible record on labor rights, and they find themselves with, you know, a pretty aggressive union, UAW, coming into their state.
No, I get that. I get the ideology. I get that you're anti-worker. But if there's a company that wants to come in that is willing to pay superior wages with good benefits and all of this, and you a high road employer. I got to tell you, I don't see the downside in bringing them in, other than it's just purely ideology. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Is there something I'm missing in this?
The problem you've been talking about probably for a few years now, which is you've got a Republican Party that's appealing to a slice of voters. They're base, and these people are ideologues, right? And you can try to explain to them the benefits of having those jobs and how everybody else benefits, but they're so angry and so resentful that they're ideologically predisposed to opposing anything that has the word union in it.
Yeah. No, and here's the thing. This is what gets me, and I guess this is the other part of the ideology. You know, I go back to myself. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland as a young kid. And I remember the neighbor who got a UAW job at Ford, oddly enough, in Cleveland. And, you know, I remember seeing firsthand their lives got better. They had food at the end of the month. They got a secondhand car. The kids got bikes. They eventually moved out of the neighborhood. So as at a very young age, the frame of union job, better life was stuck in my head. Part of me goes, maybe this is what they're afraid of, that they're going to see that these jobs are going to make people's lives better, that these jobs are going to be, you know, the best paying jobs in the area. And then there's going to be competition and people going, hey, I want jobs like that. And so there's part of me that goes, I can see why they would be against it, because you don't want people to get a taste of what could be. So I'm thinking that frame. Do you agree?
Yes, I think that they don't want to give people a taste of a fair wage, because then people move into the middle class and they're stubbornly going to hold on to that. You know, Rick, I work for the Service Employees International Union. And the local I work for represents janitors. And we fight, you know, for $15 for our janitors. The auto workers may make $40 an hour. You know, our workers, you know, just like you in the housing project, they look at what the auto workers are making and they realize, gee, that, you know, that's a place maybe I could wind up someday. But not if they crush the union.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Let me ask you, Don. I mean, obviously, this is probably going to see a lot of activity. Which state should we be paying attention to the most? I would assume, you know, your basic red state, red legislature, red governor. You know, this has got to be something that'll make the Kochs and the moneyed interest pretty happy.
Well, here's the irony, Rick. A lot of the renewable energy projects that this country's building are being built in red states.
Yep.
And you know, here you've got the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, which uniformly opposed Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which provides incentives for solar, for lithium batteries, and for wind. They opposed it, but then when the projects come to their state, they brag about them and they run on them. So a lot of these projects are going to be in red states, and in most instances, the corporations are going to ask for some help. The minimum help they're going to ask for is workforce development help.
Right.
Or they're going to ask for help in preparing the land or building roads to the site. They're going to ask for help. And I think you're going to see in Texas, Kentucky, Florida, these red states that also happen to be right-to-work states, Rick, you're going to see fights where the companies just say, we're not coming.
Isn't that a good thing
so
for states that have the right to bargain?
Renewable energy future. It hurts everybody.
But wasn't that what we would want at a certain point? Go, we're going to build manufacturing in states that are going to be friendly to workers, not ones that are hostile?
Well, you know, Ford's neutrality agreement, which was hard fought by the UAW, you know, the strikes of the 30s and the 40s, it was not like Ford gave them entree into the workplace.
Right.
It was fought for, and people died for it, literally. And now Ford says, we're going to leave our members in the union alone. The members want to join the union, that's up to them, and we're going to stay completely neutral. And that's the kind of society I think we want to have, right?
Yeah. I'm right there. So last question I got for you, Don. I mean, in looking at this, you know, clearly we're going to see this in red states. This has got to be something that the labor movement takes on full-heartedly, because, you know, once this starts, as you've said, a lot of those building projects that were going to be the next generation of middle class, you know, solid working class jobs, those are going to be cut off at the knees by these states. So what do people do?
Well, you've got to hold these legislators' feet to the fire. You got to, well, one thing, the first thing you do is you have them explain the bill to you, which they can't even do because they're just taking something that's written by the corporation and copying it verbatim, right? So we find out frequently they can't even tell you what's in the bill or what it would do. So you challenge them on that, and then I think you have to force them to ask whether they want the jobs or not. They're stuck, you know, ideologically, as you say, they don't want unions in their state. But on the other hand, they want to be able to raise money from constituents and get votes by having shown they brought jobs into the state.
Yeah.
And this renewable energy transition offers a wonderful opportunity to get some unions into some of the red states, because, as you know, the UAW's had a tough time organizing auto plants in the South, right, for all the reasons you said, the captive audience meetings, the lies about the unions, the firing of union activists. For all these reasons, it's been hard for the unions to get into the South. And here we have an opportunity under this huge new program, the Inflation Reduction Act, to have lots of new plants built, but built in the states that don't have unions.
And so to create good jobs. I mean, at the end of it, for me, Don, it's about the jobs. It's about the future for working people. But in the first part of this is exposing it, which you've done a great job of doing. I hope people will take a look at the article over at exposed by CMD.org, exposed by the Center for Media and Democracy. Don Wiener, right. I appreciate you taking time. Great stuff. I'd love to have you come back again as this continues down the road.
I appreciate you letting your listeners hear about this. It's pretty important.
Good stuff, Don.
Thank you, Rick.
Appreciate the time. Thanks so much. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
This day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the first day of a new U.S. labor partnership, the Alliance for Labor Action. The alliance was forged by the president of the United Auto Workers, Walter Reuther, and the president of the Teamsters Union, Frank Fitzsimmons. The UAW had left the AFL-CIO over differences on how to approach labor organizing. The newly formed alliance with the Teamsters stood as a progressive alternative to the AFL-CIO's approach at the time. The ALA called for forming community unions for the millions of poor and unorganized workers. It supported the civil rights movement, as well as the movement against the war in Vietnam. One of the ALA's slogans was, quote, to find answers to the urgent problems of our society. The ALA developed position papers on a series of issues. One of those urgent problems was health care. The ALA described, quote, the United States is the last remaining industrialized country in the world which does not have a national health insurance plan which would assure all its citizens at least minimum guarantee of access to needed medical care. In 1969, the ALA launched its first major organizing drive in Atlanta, Georgia. The drive targeted multiple industries and included a massive advertising campaign. But the Atlanta business community stood in staunch opposition to the unionization effort. Despite some successes, the Atlanta effort did not garner the hoped-for results. The ALA suffered another blow when Walter Reuther died in a plane crash in May of 1970. The alliance disbanded in 1972. Universal health care and many of the other causes championed by the ALA remain unrealized.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Gee, shocker of shockers, Republicans going after working people. Who would have thunk it? And the American Legislative Exchange Council at the front of it, as they have been for the last, 50 years? It's just quite remarkable. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Jack online, too, calling from Wisconsin. Jack, what's on your mind, brother?
Well, first of all, this attack on the unions is nothing new, as I'm sure you realize. I am a retired teacher, and when Scott Walker cheated his way into office in Wisconsin, he got an all-Republican legislature, and one of the first things that they did was to legislate a thing called Act 10. Act 10 basically turned teaching into a right-to-work-for-less occupation. And it also removed the ability of teachers to bargain for anything except wages. So, for instance, if your school district was paying for your health insurance, they didn't have to anymore. They could simply say, we're not going to pay for it, so here's the bill. And this happened in several districts, and people ended up actually, even though they bargained for increased wages, that increase was nowhere close to what they lost when they had to pay much, much more for their health insurance. Another thing that you could not bargain for, you couldn't really bargain for anything, like I said, except wages, but another thing you couldn't bargain for is teaching load. And that was one of the reasons why I retired, although I was old enough to do that at the time anyway. But when I retired, my school district had six teachers teaching five science classes each. Now, that may be, doesn't sound like a lot of work for a lot of people, but in fact, to teach science, I had to get into the lab at 6:30 in the morning to start preparations, and I usually didn't get out until 4:30, 5 o'clock in the evening, so I had fairly long days teaching. When I left, nobody replaced me. They simply assigned each of the science teachers one additional class, so now we had they had five science teachers, each teaching six classes.
Wow.
This is the sort of thing that this kind of an attack on unions led to. And by the way, Scott Walker said, I'm not going to do right to work for the whole state. And then I think it was 2 years later, he did right to work for the whole state.
No, none of that was on his agenda. Look, I was sleeping on the Capitol floor when Act 10 was passed. We were one of the few radio programs in the country to broadcast within the Capitol when that was going on. And I remember I was there when they passed it like thieves in the night. And, you know, talk to those TAs from UW-Madison who were the catalysts for that whole uprising, because they actually read what was in the bill and how bad it was for them and their futures. And they're the ones who really stepped forward and brought all that about and exposed it. Because you're right. The Republicans controlled everything. They could have just put it right through like thieves in the night, and no one would have ever known until it was too late. But it was because of those graduate students that really brought that to light, and good on them. But, you know, again, it's all about attack on the public sector. It's all about attack on working people, which is why I always say Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. And I'm sad to, before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts on this, though. In Waukesha, there was a teacher fired for evidently protesting a ban on the song Rainbow Land. It's not that she taught the song. It's evidently she just was upset about the policy to not be able to, and was fired for this. Any thoughts?
That's a pretty outrageous infringement on freedom of speech. She posted that objection, and it was a relatively mild objection. It basically said, this was what was done, when is it going to end? And that was the essence of the whole Twitter remark. It was like two lines on Twitter, and she was fired for that, which is, to me, just unbelievable. But again, you have next to no protections anymore. Again, because of the attack on public education. It's so bad that my son, who recently graduated from a UW school with a degree in teaching, moved to Minneapolis so he would not be teaching in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you, how has this affected? I mean, that was 2011. Here we are 12 years later. How bad has it been for teachers in Wisconsin? What's it meant for the education system of your state?
Well, we used to have, you believe these standardized tests that all of the conservatives think is the best way to evaluate your teaching, Wisconsin was number one, two, or three in the country in the ACT and SAT test before I retired. And now we're roughly in the top third, which wasn't a total disaster, but it certainly is a significant drop.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. But I appreciate the call, Jack. Good stuff. Wish you the best in Wisconsin, and I hope that I hope you turn that legislature around at some point soon. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much. No, look, I mean, you know, I remember this. I remember sleeping on the floor of the Capitol. And, you know, we broadcast from out of Brett Halsey's office. And a number of the people that we met there, were part of the program for a while as these horrible things rolled out. But the one thing I remember the most, I went to get my oil changed at a service station just around the corner from the Capitol. And I met a guy who worked for the state. And he was retired.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always.